Violence is not merely killing another. It is violent when we use a sharp word, when we make a gesture to brush away a person, when we obey because there is fear. So violence isn't merely organized butchery in the name of God, in the name of society or country. Violence is much more subtle, much deeper, and we are inquiring into the very depths of violence. And that quote comes from Jiddu Krishnamurti. Welcome to Surviving the Matrix, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Maxwell Egan. It's a pleasure to be with you once again, and I will be your host for the next hour. And it's truly a pleasure to be back, folks. I've had 2 weeks off. I've been very busy. I've been down to Adelaide to sort out a few loose ends down there and also catching up on a few things that I've had to get done around here. But all in all, I've tried to have time off the whole radio show and off the website and off everything pretty well. And I apologize for the literally hundreds of messages, emails, and all sorts of things that I have to contend with now. I really do have a lot in my inbox. I've got a lot of Facebook messages, I've got a lot of YouTube messages, I've got a lot of emails, I've got all sorts of stuff to deal with now. So please accept my apologies if it takes a little time to get back to you. I've actually also accumulated a rather substantial number of old radio shows that haven't ever been posted over the last year or so, folks. There's at least 5 or 6 or possibly even 8 or 10 radio shows that never made it to YouTube, never made it to the Crow House. So I must go through my stuff and try to sort all that out and perhaps even post them for you one day when I can find the files. I'm sure I'd have them somewhere in my archives, but it may take a little while to locate them. But that's another project I can put on the burner for the future. They just never seem to stop, folks. I always have so many projects on, it's difficult to know where to begin, really. So even when I do have time off, I really don't seem to have time off at all. And that's something that I very much attempted to do in the last 2 weeks. And that's actually the first time I've actually had off for the last 4 years, thereabouts, since I started doing these radio shows. It's funny how time flies like that. And it certainly hasn't been a 2 week break that has seen a lack of government stupidity, I might say. Even in America, we've seen Obama announce that it may be a good idea to fire pollution particles into the stratosphere in order to protect us from global warming. That's intelligence for you, folks. That shows how far the human gene has evolved so far that we're able to have world leaders who offer suggestions that are so incredibly stupid that it defies the rationale of an intelligent mind to even begin to comprehend the logic behind the decision to do that. And I'd say with that suggestion, Mr. Obama would have to take the lead in this year's most stupid suggestions offered by a world leader in order to fix a fictional problem, if that category exists anywhere. Perhaps we could open up a new Nobel Award section simply to deal with that category, as I feel it is something that is very much needed within our political arena. I don't know, folks. I really don't know what they must think that the population thinks. I mean, I honestly don't know whether he's just completely stupid or whether he's simply laughing at people when he makes statements like this or when he's told to make statements like this. I mean, it's just a complete joke, folks. The whole world's being trashed around us. Coal seam gas mining is running rampant around the world, destroying the global water table. The leaking oil wells in the Gulf of Mexico are continuing to pump pollution into our oceans. Fukushima is raging out of control, contaminating both air and ocean with vast amounts of radioactivity. And here we have Mr. Obama saying he wants to shoot garbage up into the atmosphere to protect us from the sun. And this is going to save the planet. And meanwhile, he's sending his armed forces out all over the world to scatter the place with depleted uranium and irradiate the whole place. He's doing as much posturing and warmongering as he can, and the whole place is just being destroyed. And of course, the answer to all of our problems is to shoot garbage into the stratosphere. Wonderful stuff, folks. Wonderful stuff. It truly is a wondrous thing to observe how far human consciousness has actually evolved. And here in Australia, we're seeing the typically psychopathic approach to reality that we would expect from our public servants and politicians in the announcement by the New South Wales Minister for Resources, Mr. Chris Hartcher, that coal seam gas has effectively been given the green light to go ahead and expand as much as it likes within the state of New South Wales. And this happened, folks, just days after 7,000 people rallied in the town of Lismore to stand against coal seam gas mining. And so through these actions, it becomes very clear, folks, that Mr. Chris Hartcher is a complete and utter psychopath who cares absolutely nothing for the people of New South Wales, for the well-being of the state. He cares nothing for farmland. He cares nothing for the future of the children of this country. All he cares about is supporting corrupt corporations and the expansion of one of the most pollutive and dangerous industries the world has ever known, namely coal seam gas drilling. And this is the way our government is going. And Mr. Hartcher also raised the concept of, now get this, he raised the concept of standardized land access agreements, which he said would be vital to achieving a balanced approach to private land access that will ensure certainty for both landholders and title holders. So it's being presented to the people as something that will be vital to them, but what it's actually providing is a certainty of terms. And what it basically means is that it's a standardized access agreement that has been made by the governments and the corporations, and it will prevent anybody from doing anything about anybody who wants to come onto your land and destroy the water table beneath it in order to harvest a gas that we do not need. And what this basically is, folks, this is Chris Hartcher and the New South Wales government saying, listen, we're going to come onto your land. We're going to do what we want. We're going to destroy the water table beneath it. We don't care about the food bowl. We don't care about the soil. We don't care about anything except lining our pockets. We don't care about you and your family, and there's not a damn thing you can do about it because I wrote it down on this piece of paper. That's what it means. And there is a word for this type of government action, folks, and what it is called is dictatorship. I really want you to understand this clearly. This is the basic implementation within the New South Wales government of a dictatorship in regard to any decisions that are made in relation to the coal seam gas industry. Basically, it is the government saying that in regard to this issue, you will do what your government tells you to do, and if you don't, we will put you in a cage. This is fascism, folks, pure and simple. And so now it is becoming truly important for people to begin to stand up for themselves and to begin to look at things from a perspective of natural law. It's time to do what is lawful rather than what is legal, because what is legal has nothing to do with actual law. Legal guidelines are simply that which is legislated, which is, in fact, politicians attempting to replace actual law with their will. It's politicians attempting to subvert actual law and replace it with rules that they write down on pieces of paper. That's all it is, folks. And legislation only carries the power of law through the consent of the governed. And I don't know about you, folks, but frankly, I just don't consent. And of course, legislation could only ever be given the power of law through consent of the governed, because legislation is simply rules written by other people. Our leaders are just people, folks. They're just people, just the same as you and just the same as me. They are people that we elect to office in order for them to carry out our administration process in order to ensure that we have a viable future. But what these politicians do is they get into power and they support the economic system over the needs of the individual people within society. And in fact, they see the people within society as being completely expendable if that's what needs to happen in order to support the economic model. And all countries seem to do this. It is just right across the board, folks. You can't narrow this down to any one country. You can't say that this is what America does through the Federal Reserve System, or this is what England does, or this is what Australia does, or what Canada does, because in fact it is happening right across the board through all countries. Because in all countries, what we see is that the people are the most expendable thing within the parameters of the system by which that country is governed. And we might just get into that sort of stuff a little bit on the show today and talk about some of the legal ramifications of what's happening as opposed to some of the lawful ramifications of what's happening, and see if we can't put things in some sort of perspective for people to see what I'm talking about when I talk about the difference between what is lawful and what is legal. And I'm sure I've brought this topic up many times on previous shows, but I'll try to put a little bit of clarity into what my view on the whole situation is for you today, if I can kind of manage to put it into a nutshell for you. And it may help you understand a little bit more about what I'm talking about when I make such references. And folks, look, any legal references I may make during the show today will be solely in relation to the Australian government. I mean, all the governments of the world are pretty much out of control, but as far as legal parameters go and constitutional points go, I can only really speak for my own country, because really that's all I've ever needed to use to implement certain changes in my own life, and that's all I've ever needed to know to deal with the system in my own country. So the points that I do offer during the show today do, of course, apply to Australia. Though when I'm speaking about natural law, and this applies to everybody, folks, and you can work within natural law by gaining a certain degree of understanding of the legal parameters of your own country. There are many people that are doing this. The whole free man movement really is based on natural law. It's based on common law. It's based on doing what is right, and doing what is right in all that you do, and understanding that in the breach of an actual law, there's always an injured party. If there's no injured party, then no actual law has been broken. And the people of the world really need to start gaining some sort of comprehension of all this, because, as I said earlier, the governments of the world are very much out of control. And that's certainly the case in my country. The Australian government is completely out of control, and it's going to remain out of control until the people begin to realise that they are the ones who control their government. And we do not have to go along with any legislation which presumes to contravene natural law. And I'd actually like to talk about this a little bit for a while, folks, just so you understand where I'm coming from and try to understand really what natural law is and understand the power that you each have as an individual, because I believe it's because people fail to understand this power and they fail to look at things from the correct perspective that they are having so much trouble dealing with this situation. And I believe the situation of coal seam gas is a very important issue. It's an issue that can be used to unite virtually all of the people in this country, and because it is such a sensitive issue and it is an issue that is being pushed so hard by government, then it's also a wonderful opportunity for people to begin to understand natural law and how to implement natural law and how to stand in natural law and how to be who and what they are and how to be all that they can be, how to come into the power that they naturally have and put their governments back in the correct place in the food chain, which is that of the servants and administrators of the people, who only actually have the power that we grant to them. And as I said, folks, when I'm speaking about all this, of course, it's important to remember that I'm speaking about Australia, and any acts or statutes or constitutional points that I make will be related to Australia. And if you are an American, or you are Dutch, or you are Finnish, or French, or English, or Canadian, or whatever, and you happen to be listening to this show, then you need to look for these points within your own legal system so that you know which particular acts and sections you can refer to should you need to call upon this information in order to protect yourself in your own country. And really, folks, when I talk about all this stuff, what I want you to understand is that all I'm really talking about is common sense. I'm simply looking at things logically and seeing the hierarchical system for what it is and asking questions. I'm certainly not offering anyone any legal advice, because I'm not a legal practitioner. I'm simply looking at it from a perspective of understanding what true natural law is and then looking at what we have before us in the form of a legal system and trying to apply a little common sense to it all. And that's really my sole objective in even attempting to discuss this issue. Because we do have rights, folks, and these rights are there for every person who lives within a democratic society, but rights only work if you choose to exercise them. That's the thing about rights, folks. If you don't use them, they do get taken away from you. But very often, they're still there. They don't really get taken away from you, they just get glossed over so you don't perceive what's really going on anymore. But if you look a little deeper, you find that you do have rights, and that if you choose to exercise those rights, you will very often find remedy. And as I said, folks, look, I'm not a legal practitioner, so I'm not attempting to offer you legal advice, and I don't pretend to be an expert on any of this stuff either. I mean, if you really want to start getting into law and start understanding it, and you live in Australia here, then perhaps go and look at some of the talks of people like Franco Collins, go and look at the things that Mark McMurtry says. Go to a website called southernfreemen.com, log on there and have a talk to those guys, because they're out there on the front line and they're very much involved in exposing this whole legal system and in navigating their way through this legal system. I mean, I was actually down there a couple of weeks ago and I was talking to a few of the members, and one of them said to me, well, look, you know, if I've got a fine that's $200 or $300, I think, well, okay, it's only $200 or $300. I may as well go to court and challenge it and see how far I get, see what works and see what doesn't. So that's how it happens, folks. You've got to get involved. And sometimes it's going to work and sometimes it isn't, but it's a learning process for all of us. So I would say that anybody who claims to be a complete expert on it, you should be very wary of, but there are people who are quite knowledgeable, such as the two people I mentioned earlier, namely Mark McMurtry and Franco Collins. There's also a man called Larry Hannigan, who is quite adept at constitutional law, and these are some people that would probably be worth your while to go and listen to. I've got a clip embedded to the Crow House, which I called the Australian Constitution for Dummies, and it's actually a talk by Larry Hannigan called The Voice of the Australian Constitution, and you can click at the source link below there to go to Larry Hannigan's website, and he will give you some information on constitutional law. And I believe Franco Collins has a website called one-evil.org. But if you simply Google Franco Collins or Mark McMurtry or Larry Hannigan, through those three individuals, you will be able to gain a reasonable type of an understanding of constitutional law. And then again, as I said, you could go to southernfreemen.com and discuss your newfound knowledge with the people on that website. And if we all work together, we will find a clear path through the maze that's been set up for us. And personally, I believe the clear path through the maze lies in natural law. It lies in people first understanding who and what they are, and in understanding the difference between that which is legal and that which is lawful. And again, folks, in saying all this, it's important for you to understand that all I'm offering you today is my perspective. That's really all I have to give. I know what works for me when I'm dealing with particular situations, and so that's what I'm attempting to offer you in regards to this conversation. And something that I want to stress throughout all of this, folks, is once you understand how this legal system works, what you begin to see is that we already live in a fascist state. We already live in a dictatorship. We have a country that is run by a government that is essentially a criminal government because they themselves break law every single day. They even break their own law that they write to control us. So in order to understand the whole thing, what you really need to understand first is who and what you are, what natural law actually is, and where legal law or legislation or the legal system actually comes from and what its basis is. And what you are, folks, is you are man. You are a living, breathing, sentient life form of flesh with blood flowing in your body. And the legal system itself claims to be based in the laws of God, and it has its origins in ecclesiastic law. It all comes from the church, the whole lot. The whole Western legal system has its basis in Vatican law. So therefore, you need to look at what your relationship is to God in the eyes of the church in order to understand where we are in the social hierarchy. And it says in Genesis, on the very first page of the Bible, in Genesis chapter 26, it says, "And God said, let us make man in our image and after our likeness, and let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the fowl of the air, and over the cattle, and over all the earth." So basically, God created man and gave man dominion over the earth. That is under their law. That is in the book that our governments use as the basis for their entire legal system. So that puts things very much in perspective. That lets you know where you are in the food chain according to their system. You were created by God and you were given dominion over the earth. So everything below that that is created by man is basically below that. I mean, you are the top of the food chain as far as the legal system goes. Because below that comes society. Man created society. Society created government. Government created statute law. And it's the statute law that is being used to enslave man and take the rights away from man simply because we have forgotten where we sit in the food chain. Because even under their system, we are the top of the food chain. So that's point one. And when you talk to people and when you talk to police officers, when you talk to any type of legal personages at all, you need to remember where you sit in the food chain, where you sit in the social hierarchy. You are man, you are the top of the food chain, and you are talking to another man. It doesn't matter what the uniform is, it doesn't matter what their position is, always talk to the man within the uniform and not to the uniform itself. And that's point two, and that's the two most important things for you to remember in all of your interaction with anything legal. Always know that you are man, and always know that what you are talking to is also man. You are completely equal. There is no difference. And what actually exists between you should be mutual respect and natural law, which would be classed as God's law, and natural law is basically do no harm. That's it. Treat all as equal. Serve creation. Make the world a better place by your presence in it. Always grant others the respect that you would like to see bestowed upon yourself and accept nothing less from others. There are too many people who want to get into arguments with police officers and want to get into arguments with judges. They want to get into arguments with authority because they wish to exert their power. They wish to basically go on the attack and show that I can beat you, I can be better than you, I can do this, I can do that, when really they're not approaching the situation in respect, and they're not simply standing in who and what they are and treating the person that they're talking to as just another equal of themselves. That's where it all falls down. And really, if you treat other people with respect, you treat police officers with respect, treat authority with respect, but don't accept anything less than that same respect back from the people whom you are conversing with. I mean, by respecting authority, it doesn't mean you have to do what they say. It just means you treat the person within the uniform in a respectful manner. But as I said, you also do not accept anything less than that mutual respect back from them. And you always approach things logically, and you'll find you can get through most situations simply by asking the right questions. And this is because you do have rights, folks. We have rights in all of our countries, and we just fail to exert those rights. And I'll go through a few of these things in a moment, and we'll go through some theoretical conversations that could happen with authorities and some of the points that you could perhaps make, and just a different way of looking at things and a different perspective for you to be able to view things from. But we're almost at break time here, so what I will do is I will leave that discussion until after the break so we don't lose any continuity. And that should hopefully make it a little bit easier for people to assimilate. But folks, through all of this, I cannot stress the importance of remembering what your position is in the social hierarchy. Remembering that you are man. You are a living, breathing, sentient life form of flesh and blood. You have a completely unique and a completely valid perspective of reality, the same as every other living being on this planet. And it's really important that you understand that. It's really important that you stand in that, because that is the basis of all natural law, knowing who and what you are. If you don't know who and what you are, and you don't know that you are free within your heart, there is no path that you can take. There is no forms you can fill out. There is no action that you can undertake in your life to establish your freedom. You first have to know within your heart what you are, and know that you are free to begin with. And that's my approach to it all. You know, if there's any forms that I have to fill out, if there's any documents I have to send to anybody, if there's anything I have to do to establish my freedom according to their system, then how free do I believe I am? That's the thing. I don't have to do anything to establish my freedom. I already know that I'm free. If someone is claiming that I'm not, I'd like them to show me proof of claim. That's my approach to the whole thing. And it is really important that you understand this, and it is really important that you stand in that. Because I've had people write to me and they've wanted me to give them templates. They wanted me to give them forms and documents that they can use to establish their freedom. And honestly, there's nothing I can do to do that for them. I mean, I could give you documents and templates that you can send to people, but there's no piece of paper that you're going to be able to hold in your hand that you can wave in a police officer's face or a judge's face and say, look, look, I'm free, that is going to work unless you know who and what you are to begin with. You see, I don't need to send any forms or documents to anybody, folks, because I already know that I'm free, and if someone's claiming that I'm not, it's up to them to prove that I'm not. And I can usually establish this freedom simply by asking the right questions. And that's what I want to go through after the break. But we are at break time now, folks, so I'll leave it here for now. Thank you very much for joining me on the show today, and I'll speak to you again in a few minutes. Thanks for listening. And welcome back, folks. Now, what we're talking about today is law, and how to understand the difference between what is legal and what is lawful, how to stand in your natural power that you have, and how to sort of maneuver your way through the system should you need to do so. And folks, I'm not telling you how to break the law here either. I mean, if you've broken the law and there's an injured party in your actions, then basically you've thrown yourself into the system of your own accord. What I'm discussing here is how to stop yourself from being trodden on by the authorities and being subject to standover tactics by government employees. Because that's what these people are, folks. The members of parliament and the members of our government are our employees. And they will stand over you because most people don't know how to exercise the basic rights that they have. And this is why I always say that we have a criminal government, because these governments do everything they can to tie people up in red tape and baffle them with legislation when they themselves breach natural law and common law at every available opportunity, simply because people don't know how to stand up for themselves, because they're always caught and tied up within these legal parameters that they just don't understand. But there's a way to step back from the legal parameters and look at everything from a perspective of what is lawful rather than what is legal. And that's where the remedy lies. Well, that's where I believe the remedy lies anyway. And something else I'm not suggesting you do here, folks, is to go out and get yourself in trouble. I mean, even some of the questions that I'm about to go through here, these work in some situations, but in some situations they won't. It just depends on the people that you're dealing with. But you can usually diffuse situations by remaining calm and simply talking to people and asking questions. And if the person that you're dealing with is continually aggressive, then just make sure you get their badge number and their name, and you contact the correct people after your encounter with this individual and deal with it that way. You know, if you're dealing with someone who is naturally aggressive and might end up tasing you or beating you or throwing you in a cell, as many police officers are prone to do, then of course you should approach the individuals with caution, and you should simply be satisfied with getting their name and badge number and taking the matter up with the correct authorities after you've had the encounter with them. But what I'd like to do really is, by using a series of questions, just point out what's actually happening to you in these situations. So for a start, I mean, if I'm out driving in a vehicle and a cop pulls me over and wants to see my license and registration or give me a random breath test, half the time I just comply because I can't be bothered arguing. I'm on the side of the road, I'm vulnerable. So I can't see any point in going through the whole procedure if it's only going to take a couple of minutes. I mean, I'm not smuggling drugs. I don't have a teenage girl in the boot. There's nothing that I'm doing that's illegal anyway. So I don't give a damn whether these people pull me over or do whatever. Keep it painless and leave me go on my way, which is what always happens because I don't drink drive, I don't smuggle drugs, I don't do anything wrong. So that's just the way it is, and that's just the way I deal with that. I can't be bothered dealing with a cop on the side of the road because these guys don't know what's going on. But if I'm anywhere, say I'm out at a hotel or I'm out at sitting in a park or I'm anywhere at all and I'm approached by a police officer, the first thing I ask them is, are you arresting me? And they, of course, say no. And then I will say, well, is there a controversy here that I'm involved in? I can't see that I'm involved in any controversy that would indicate I require the assistance of the police service. Why are you talking to me? And very often at this point, they'll say something like, hey, look, I'm just doing my job. To which I will respond, well, isn't your job apprehending criminals? Have you approached me under the assumption that I'm a criminal then? Because I take offence to that if that's why you've approached me. Unless they're a little bit persistent, very often they walk away at that point. But very often they will also perhaps ask you for identification. Because very often when a police officer walks up to you, the first thing he's going to do is ask you for identification because that's why he's walked up to you, because he wants to know who you are. So I've kind of just preempted all of that and tried to establish why he has walked up to me, because obviously if he's not arresting me and I'm not involved in any controversy, that I am under no obligation to even converse with this individual. But very often, as I said, at that point they may ask you for identification. And if this happens, if a police officer ever asks me for identification, I will ask them whether it's a request or whether it's a demand. And they will, of course, say it's a request, and I will respond with, well, if it's a request, then obviously I have a choice, and after careful consideration, I've decided that I will not be acquiescing to your request. Thank you for the offer. At which point they or their partner will usually pipe up and say, well, okay, mate, it's a demand. And then I will say, okay, a demand. Are you a slave trader? And he will say something like, no, I'm a member of the New South Wales Police Department. And I will say, okay, are you a public servant then? And he will again respond by saying, no, I'm a member of the New South Wales Police Department. So what the police officer has indicated to you there by that statement is he's indicated to you that the New South Wales Police Department is not a department of government, but must be a private company that contracts the government, because he's just stated that he's not a public servant. So what we are working in is contract law. He's just kind of let that cat out of the bag without actually saying it to you by telling you that he's not a public servant. So, okay, you could take it a little bit further. You could say, well, if I don't show you identification, are you going to arrest me? Yes, yes, we will arrest you. Okay, well, are you prepared to use violence to do so? Yes, yes, we will if it's necessary. And, folks, you've got to remember at this point that you're speaking English. They might be speaking legalese, but you're speaking English, and, of course, you're assuming that they are as well, because this whole legal system is based on assumptions and presumptions, and we're presuming that they're speaking English because that's what we speak, and we understand what English means, and we understand that the Oxford English Dictionary definition of the word terrorism is violence or the threat of violence carried out against civilians as a means of coercion, often for political reasons. And this police officer has basically just confirmed to you that he is prepared to use terrorism in order to enforce a non-existent contract. And this is simply by him saying, yes, he is prepared to use violence in order to arrest you should you fail to comply with his wishes. You might at this point ask him if he's representing the Crown. And he may say, yes, yes, I'm representing the Crown, or he may say, I'm representing the state of New South Wales, but obviously he's representing somebody related to the Crown, or else he would not be there questioning you to begin with. At which point you could say, well, okay, if you're prepared to use violence against me, I will comply with your wishes because I don't wish to have an act of terrorism carried out against me. But what I need for you to understand is that you, Officer John Smith, whatever his name is, I need you to understand that I intend to hold you, the man within the uniform, personally responsible for your actions. Because if the Crown wishes to exercise a right of ownership over me through you and your enforcement of one of their statutes in order to enforce a non-existent contract it claims I have with your company, and which you've indicated that you are prepared to use terrorism to enforce, then I need you to understand that I'll be holding you, John Smith, responsible for your actions and holding you responsible for breaches of Sections 268 and 270 of the Australian Criminal Code, 1997 Commonwealth, which states very specifically that no individual may be compelled by any other individual to perform any task or action against their will, because that is called slavery. And you'll find that you have slavery laws in whatever country you are in, folks. And if a police officer representing any type of private company chooses to exercise a right of ownership over you, these police officers are in breach of the slavery clause of your nation. There's only two crimes that are global. There's only two crimes that are illegal in every single country on earth, and that is slavery and piracy. And what this police officer has just done, by answering the series of questions, he has confirmed to me that he is attempting to exercise a right of ownership over me in order to enforce a non-existent contract, and he's prepared to use terrorism to do so. And you need for this individual to know that, yes, you will comply with their wishes under duress and out of fear for your own safety, but in doing so, this individual within the uniform is to be held 100% responsible for his actions. I won't be taking action against my town's police station. I won't be taking action against the New South Wales Police Department, but I will be taking action against you, the individual man within the uniform, for breaches of your own legislation, the government's very own legislation as it pertains to slavery. So yeah, I'll get out of your way. I'll do what you want. And then what you do, folks, is you take that officer's name and badge number and you report that officer to the Office of the Attorney General. You report it to ethical standards in your state, and you also contact an insurance company called Police Health Australia, and you report to the insurance company the actions of the offending officer as well. And this is a way we can use their system to protect ourselves from their system, because they are the ones who are stepping outside of the law, folks. They are the ones who are finding loopholes and who are overstepping the mark. The problem is that we do not use the system that they created against them in order to establish our freedom. And that's what we can do. And the only way you can do this, folks, is by knowing that you're free, standing in your own power and choosing to exercise the rights that you have. Because everything that I've just outlined for you there, that's even using their system. That's not even using natural law at all. That's just using the system that they put in place and holding them accountable to it. And what happens if it's taken a little bit further? What happens if perhaps, say, you are fined over a particular issue? Well, that's okay, because there's no way you can pay the fine under the current system that's in place within Australia. So what you're facing really is a fine that the Crown cannot possibly hope to collect, as there is no valid currency currently in circulation or available anywhere within Australia with which to extinguish debt. And let me just explain why this is the way it is. Because we have a constitution in this country, and it's a very wonderful constitution. And Section 109 of the Australian Constitution, this is Chapter 5, the States, Section 109, states very clearly that when a law of a state is inconsistent with the law of the Commonwealth, the latter shall prevail, and the former shall, to the extent of the inconsistency, be invalid. And Chapter 5, Section 115 also states very clearly, a state shall not coin money, nor make anything but gold and silver coin a legal tender in payment of debt. And this is very important, folks, because this is an express prohibition. Okay? And what that means is that the states are expressly prohibited from making anything other than gold and silver coin legal tender in payment of debts. I mean, it's only one line, folks. Section 115 is only that one sentence, so it's not like it's open for interpretation. And what it means is that a state therefore cannot substitute anything else for payment of debt. It cannot substitute property or assets of any kind, nor can it impose a period of imprisonment as a substitute for non-payment, as none of these things constitute gold and silver coin. So if you go to court in a state, then a state court may find liability and it may order you to pay a fine, but it cannot order that anything other than gold and silver coin be used to pay that fine and extinguish that debt. And as there is no gold and silver coins in common circulation, it is therefore not possible for a state to make any person pay any debts to a state, nor to any person within the state, because if they did, this would breach Section 115 of the Australian Constitution. You see, a state is prohibited from demanding anything other than gold and silver coin. So what this means, folks, is that the actual State Penalties Enforcement Act of 1999 is invalid, where it claims to be able to steal assets, homes, vehicles, anything like that, or to garnish bank accounts, and it cannot even lawfully prevent a person from holding a driver's license due to an inability to pay fines or penalties. And it also prevents any state instrumentality from instructing a bank to hand over money from any account, because banking law is the preserve of the Commonwealth Parliament, and the states cannot create a law enabling themselves to circumvent any part of the Commonwealth Constitution. And let's face it, folks, electrons on a computer screen are not gold and silver coin. Now, folks, this is very, very explicit in the Constitution. Section 115, it isn't a either-or situation. It's a neither-nor requirement, which leaves no room for error or interpretation. It's a stone wall, folks. It is an impenetrable barrier to the state ever collecting any debt from anybody or from anybody within any state in Australia, having to pay any fine to any state. But people never question this. So if you are ever taken to court and you are presented with any fine, then simply ask the judge how you are expected to pay the fine, considering Section 115 of the Constitution. What you will very likely be told by the judge is that that is not their concern and that you'll have to figure that out, which of course means that the debt cannot be paid, as the Crown obviously cannot collect that which is not available. As I said, folks, this is an impenetrable barrier to you ever having to pay any fines to any state within Australia, and there's absolutely nothing they can do about it, and that's under their own legislation. That's under their own law. That is under the Australian Constitution, which is the basis of all law in this country. And most of the information pertaining to those clauses in that section of the Constitution and how this works in court has been provided for us by Larry Hannigan on his website. And so that provides people with even a better understanding of how this system works and how you can approach the matter if you're simply prepared to stand in who and what you are. And there are other situations where you can exercise your power, folks. Look at what's going on with the coal seam gas issues. The police are coming onto people's property and they are clearing the way for mining companies. And what you find is the police arrive on the scene and they give people directions and they give them directives. They arrive there and they say, I am a police officer. I'm representing the state of New South Wales. I am going to give you a direction. If you fail to comply with my direction, you will be arrested. But no one ever questions the use of the word direction. What does it mean by giving you a direction? How can a police officer even give you a direction? What direction is he giving you? Is he giving you north, south, east, west? Remember, folks, we're speaking English here. Excuse me, sir, I don't understand what you mean by the word direction. It sounds like you're requesting that I perform an action. Is that what's going on? Yes, I'm requesting that you get off the road. Okay, is it a request or a demand? And we put it back into the slavery clause. Because let's face it, folks, if you're standing there protecting the water table against coal seam gas mining, and a police officer is going to support the destruction of the water table and prosecute you because you are in breach of a statute, well, the only injured party is you. So who broke the law? The government broke the law, the police broke the law. That's the thing. They might have been enforcing statutes, but in order to enforce the statutes, they had to break actual law. You let them do it because you never stand up for your rights and approach things from the correct manner. You never look at it from a lawful perspective. You always look at it from a legal perspective. But if you are standing to protect the earth and standing to protect the water table, and these mining companies damage the water table and damage the environment through actions such as coal seam gas mining, then now there's an injured party, the injured party being the human race. And you're standing there to protect the water table against the criminal actions of the mining company. And the police are supporting the criminal actions of the mining company, and they're prepared to prosecute you for being in breach of a statute for which there is no injured party. Well, now there's an injured party, namely the person who was prosecuted. That's the way it works, folks. The only injured party in the breach of a statute is the person who's prosecuted. So who broke the law? The government broke the law, the police broke the law, the mining companies broke the law. And that's the fact of the matter. But what they do is they tie people up in a legislative process, and this leads people away from natural law. That's what legislation is designed to do, folks. I've said it many, many times. Legislation is put there to remove law from existence and replace it with the will of individuals. That is the purpose of legislation. And that's its only purpose. It's not there to keep anybody safe. It's there to allow the corporate rape of the planet. And it will continue until people see it for what it is and they start exercising their rights as members of mankind. And if it goes further, folks, and you are ever dragged into court by this system, it's important that when you're in court that you also stand there as a member of mankind. You need to establish that you are a living being of living flesh, that blood flows in your body. You're not a dead entity, because the court can only deal with dead entities. If you stand before the judge and you tell the judge that you are a living being of living flesh, that blood flows in your veins, and you humbly ask the court for remedy, then the judge has no other option than to grant you remedy. He has to do so, but he won't do so unless you ask for remedy. If you go in there and you say, yes, I am that name, then you've said you are a dead entity. You are a corpse, and therefore you can be treated as such in a commercial court. But I mean, again, folks, even if you don't do that, and even if you're required to pay a fine, well, that's okay. Put a fine on me. You can put another zero on there if you want, because there's no valid currency in circulation with which to pay it with anyway, and the state cannot demand that I pay it when there is no currency in circulation. So I don't really care how much you fine me anyway. But you'll find, folks, that if you ask for remedy, you probably won't even get a fine. And you could look at Franco Collins' website for ways to go through this, folks. You can go to court, you can ask humbly for remedy, and the court will grant you remedy. And there are certain steps you can go through. If they won't, it may take a couple of goes. But the thing is, folks, what I'm getting at here through this whole talk is that rights only work if you choose to exercise them. Very often we're intimidated by police officers. Very often we're intimidated by the whole legal system. And it is a very intimidating system, but what's important to understand is that it's fiction. It was just written down on pieces of paper by people that we employ to do the opposite of what they're doing, essentially. I mean, that's what's going on. We actually employ politicians to look after us, but they do exactly the opposite of that. But within the legal structure in this country anyway, there are certain things that are in place through the Constitution that give us rights that cannot be taken from us. One of those rights, as I said, is the fact that we cannot be subject to any state legislation that contravenes Commonwealth law or contravenes the Constitution. And once people realize that they don't actually have to pay any fines within this country because there is no legal currency in circulation that can be used to extinguish debt, then that takes a huge financial burden off people. And I'm not saying go out and break the law. I'm just saying when you are given a fine, question your ability to pay that fine, considering Section 115 of the Constitution. Because according to Section 115, you don't have to pay it until there's currency in circulation. And the fiat currency that we pass around to each other, folks, it doesn't matter if we choose to give it value in our everyday transactions, that's our prerogative to do so. But according to the Constitution, the state cannot demand that we use that currency in order to extinguish debt, because the states cannot coin money, nor can they demand anything other than gold and silver coin be used. And that's it. It's not negotiable, folks. So if you live in Australia, folks, you don't need to waste your hard-earned paper or hard-earned plastic or hard-earned digital credits on paying fines that the state demands you pay, because the federal government has not put any legitimate currency in circulation with which to pay these fines with. And should state instrumentations such as the State Debt Recovery Office contact you in order to pay fines, then I suggest you contact the Federal Attorney General and alert them to the serious breaches of constitutional law that are being attempted by this government instrument, which is, of course, operating well outside its jurisdiction, because everybody in Australia is subject to constitutional law, folks. It doesn't matter who you are. If you live in Australia, then you are subject to the Constitution of Australia. This includes all police officers. It includes all parliamentarians. It includes every single individual in this country. And therefore, it doesn't matter what organisation is demanding whatever. They cannot be in breach of Australian constitutional law. But they are, and they get away with it because we do not hold them accountable for their actions, and we do not exercise the rights that we inherently have very often because we simply don't know that we have these rights. Because the Australian Constitution is not something that is taught in schools. A lot of Australian people don't even know that we have a constitution. But we do. It's a very valuable document, and it does work, and all you have to do is choose to exercise your rights. And it all comes down, folks, to knowing who and what you are, not being scared of these people, knowing that you have these rights should you choose to exercise them, and understanding that the people that you're dealing with are just people. They're just like you. They are just flesh and blood, living, sentient beings. They are no better. They are no worse. They are no different than anybody else. We just have people who have got themselves into positions of power and are currently abusing that power. They have a gang of thugs in blue uniform which run around the town exercising rights of ownership over people to enforce non-existent contracts, and they've got the people scared into submission. But it's time we stopped being scared, folks. It's time we stood up as who and what we are, because that is the way we change the world. And that is the only way that we change the world. We're being provided with the opportunities we need to do so, and it's about time we put the wheels in motion and reclaimed this planet for mankind, rather than allow it to be destroyed by the corporations who currently hold the reins of power. And that's about it for me for the day, folks. I hope I've made some sort of sense with all of this. Again, I don't claim to be any type of expert. I'm simply attempting to offer you my perspective and maybe suggesting a few places you can go and look to find out a little bit more about this. Don't forget that if you live in Australia, look up Franco Collins, look up Larry Hannigan, look up Mark McMurtry. Go to the southernfreemen.com website and discuss things with those guys and start standing in your power, folks, because now is the time that we turn things around, and it's getting to a stage where we really don't have any choice, folks. We have to pay attention, and we have to stand up and turn things around, and I think we have to do it pretty quickly. Thank you for joining me on the show today. Thank you for continuing to visit thecrowhouse.com. Thank you to anybody who has ever shown any support to the website. It's always much appreciated and very much needed. And I'll look forward to speaking to you again next week. Please take care until then. And please, folks, don't use this information to go and get yourselves in trouble. But again, don't ever doubt yourself. Know the power that you have to affect positive change, because together we can stand and make a positive difference. In Lakesh.